This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 313 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuddersIncPodcast.com, and joining me on the line via Skype from Melbourne once again, from creativephotoworkshops.com.au, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Hi.
It's a bit like that, isn't
it? No, I'm not high. How are you? I'm high.
I think we're anything but high this week.
I think we might be just a little bit tired.
Yeah. So how was the digital show?
3 days is how it was. It had its moments.
Right.
I had 9 classes over 3 days, Whoa. As I said. So, and it was like running 3 workshops a day. I was exhausted. End of first day, I could hardly move.
Yeah, right.
Physically, because the floors are cement.
Right.
Tiny bit of carpeting. And, you know, I can go to a place like India and walk for 18 hours for a day and feel fine. But standing up for a few hours on this stuff just kills you.
Yeah.
So I was in just physical pain. I got home.
And what carpet is there? Is that really thin,
yeah, exactly, yeah.
Really heavy industrial yeah. carpet?
If you use that luxurious 3-ply toilet tissue, it's actually thicker. So I was getting cramps in all sorts of unusual places.
Yeah, right.
I got a cramp under my jaw.
Okay.
If you shove your finger up inside under your jaw,
yeah.
I got a cramp. How do you get a cramp inside there?
Doing your blue steel look too often.
Yeah, so,
chin on the fist.
So I didn't get a great deal of chance to look around the show because I was so busy. And
right. Yeah,
in between sessions, talking to customers, talking to people and stuff, and answering questions and stuff.
Yeah.
So there wasn't an awful lot of time.
Yeah, right.
But the first session was an absolute, well, shall we say, cluster fluff, I think is the best. So I've got the new Godox flashes.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, well, first up, you know, stupid me,
yeah.
I've got to be ambitious.
Yeah. Okay.
My goal was to do 5 shoots in each class,
yeah.
Plus teach them how to use all about flash.
Right.
In an hour and a half. Which by the and they were going to shoot, yeah, all 12 people attending in each class were going to shoot each of the 5 shoots.
Right. Set up. So that's 60 shots.
Yep. Each.
In an hour and a half.
So it's 720.
They've got 90 seconds each.
So 780. Stupid. By the end of the
you didn't
the
do the maths
day,
before you started.
They got 1 shot each. They got 1. Take this for a reference shot and get the hell out of my class. But to make matters worse, the very first one, I was using Godox with the triggers and the batteries and the all that stuff. But KL were launching the Godox, so they were demonstrating them.
Yep.
Godox themselves were there on the stand. And there was like two other classes running them as well.
Right.
And none of us had got together to talk about, I don't know, frequency, the channel we might want to use.
Oh, no.
Not one of us had.
Oh.
So my classroom's like a disco, you know. These flashes of.
Classic.
Disaster. So the first session was just an out-and-out disaster. It was just, I was just a ball of sweat.
Yeah, right.
It was
wondering who the hell was triggering your flashes.
Was nothing was working. It just was a disaster.
Oh,
and it slowly improved. And the second one was a bit better. The third one was better. Then the final 2 days were pretty good.
Right.
But the first day was just an effing disaster. But of the whole weekend, I only took 1 image that I liked. I didn't take a lot of photos. I probably only took 20 photos for the whole weekend.
Right.
But I only took 1 that I liked, which is a bit disappointing.
Yeah, right.
And that was like set up in the last 2 minutes on the last day, the second day, just to demonstrate something really quickly. All the other stuff I'd actually set up, I didn't like that much.
Right.
Just sort of quickly just threw it together just to demonstrate something. It looked awesome.
Yeah.
It's like typical overthink stuff, you know. My favourite quote of the weekend, though, I had a favourite little quote from the digital show,
yeah.
From one person who attended, and this is a Facebook quote.
Yeah.
Just returned from the digital show.
Yeah.
First highlight was I saw Glyn Lavender. Second highlight was that I spoke to Glyn Lavender. Third highlight was leaving.
Nice.
That made my weekend, as you can imagine. That's pretty funny. And this person who actually wanted to come to my class but couldn't get in, went to another one, and ended up demanding a refund. He was that disappointed.
From the other class?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because he reckons the description versus the content was so completely. Now, I personally don't necessarily think that's right, but you know, having talked to, so this guy later put out a scathing review of this this other class on Facebook. So I went down the next morning and told the guy who was running it, and I read it out to him. As you do, because he's a nice guy. We had a chat and a bit of a laugh, and that was kind of funny.
Yeah, wow.
But I did get another nice one tonight as well from a lady.
Yeah.
I also blah 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 blah. Gee, you're awesome. Blah, whatever. I enjoyed the workshop. Got a lot out of it. I also attended another workshop. This is what astounds me. You ready for this?
Right.
Are you sitting down?
I am.
I attended another workshop, which highlighted how professional your workshop was.
Right.
How low was this bar we're talking about? How low was the standards? Which highlighted how professional your workshop was, not to mention a lot of fun as well.
I think it was a limbo bar, mate.
Well, I had this terrible joke. I had all sorts of terrible jokes. I actually managed to stop myself saying something on the weekend, which was rather impressive.
Right.
It's really bad. I'm glad I did.
Yeah.
The one I couldn't resist repeating in every class was, I was streaming everything Wi-Fi from my camera to the TV. Okay,
right.
So when I shoot, you can review the image.
Yep.
But it takes 9 seconds.
Oh, okay.
Even low JPEG res, I was taking about 9 seconds. So I'm stood there waiting. And 9 seconds when you're waiting can seem an eternity.
Yeah.
So I said to her, look at this. How long does 9 seconds feel? And they all going, oh, it seems ages. I said, yeah, my wife reckons it's no time at all. I don't know what she's complaining about. So,
dear.
There's that professionalism she's talking about. So the show was missing Sony,
mm-hmm.
missing Panasonic, and missing Canon, which is
you mean Nikon?
No, Nikon were there.
Oh,
Canon weren't there.
Oh, okay. In your notes, you had
I know. Yeah. Ignore my notes and what I'm saying.
Right. Okay.
So I just deleted it on my notes and didn't happen to affect yours because mine's in Word and yours is on Skype, which is kind of interesting, isn't it?
Wow.
Yes. So
that's pretty sad.
And a lot of people came wanting to see them,
yeah.
Like Canon especially, and obviously hadn't checked, obviously just assuming they're going to be there, and quite disappointed. So there's a lot of horrible stuff going around on Facebook, on social media, picking on Canon.
Yep.
But probably the worst thing of all, because Canon were there, kind of there surreptitiously, because alongside the digital show is the APA Awards, the Australian Professional Photography.
Canon are major sponsors, aren't they?
Canon's major sponsor. So
yeah,
all these people who are running the apps are all wearing these shirts with Canon on it.
Right.
And they're all getting abuse from people walking along who came to see Canon and seeing this logo Canon and picking on these poor people who have nothing to do with it, you know?
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, that's a bit unpleasant. And the rumours I hear from the show is that Canon aren't even going to do the apps next year.
Wow.
So Canon are pulling out almost completely any involvement with the photo industry, effectively.
Whoa. So what's their business model, if that's where they're headed?
Well, God knows.
Right.
I mean, it was always a sign when they got their own website selling their own stuff. And Canon were pretty sneaky. They did this thing for several years before they opened up their own website. They ran all these great competitions and all this great cashback stuff. So, but to get the cashback from Canon,
you had to put in your email address.
And if you wanted to join their Photo 5 competition, you had to give them the email address. They built this massive database of Canon users and then put their own website out selling Canon gear and marketed directly to them.
Yeah, right.
Which, of course, the poor retailers who've been loyally supporting them for years suddenly have this massive competitor, the person who's supplying them.
Yeah.
So that was a pretty, I guess it's a sign of the world, but in a small industry like it is in Australia, that's pretty darn tough.
Yeah.
So next year, if things actually go to plan, there's going to be a show in Sydney, I'm told.
Right. So I thought it was meant to be Brisbane next year.
No. So Sydney in the new entertainment centre.
If it's finished.
Well, apparently.
Right. Yeah.
So that's going to be good. I'll look forward to coming up there and being star of that one. Apparently, I was the star of this one. So, out of all the feedback of all the sessions, mine got the highest rating for the whole show. So that's kind of nice.
Cool.
Yeah, so that must be that professionalism again. But once again, I said, how bad was everybody else?
Of all the wives that you surveyed, you were the best.
I'm so glad my mum came along and filled all those forms in. Out of there all 3 days, working the heart out. You know? I didn't just make the whole thing of stamps. You could just stamp it on top of this. So that was kind of nice to get looked on that way. And for a little one-man business, it's kind of nice to stand out.
Yeah.
Good against all these big guys with all their big budgets and stuff. So it was kind of cool. But the Godox, other than that, they went a treat.
Yeah.
New flashes. The best thing of all. Now the new battery packs. They power the flash full recycle at full power in a second to hit. Right. Yeah. But I took these things out of the box.
Mm.
Didn't charge them.
Right.
Shot with them for 3 days.
Yeah.
The first session they must have gone off about 4,000 times. They're all still on 3/4 power.
Wow.
Didn't even have to think about recharging them. You had all these recharge stations set up all over the place. Didn't use them once.
Wow, that's awesome.
I've got two flash workshops, not this weekend, but the next 2 weekends I have two flash workshops in Melbourne coming up.
Yep.
Not even going to bother even looking at the chart. I'm just going to take them along, not even check them. The only thing I had to change is the flashes do need AA batteries in the flash to function.
Right.
Because they power up the circuitry or something.
Right.
And so a couple of those needed changing, but I don't think they were fresh batteries to start with.
Right.
Across the course of the whole weekend, that's quite amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, didn't miss a beat as far as hitting the trigger and they fired. That's pretty good.
That's great.
The hardest thing to get used to for me, though, was all these flashes are capable of being controlled by the main trigger.
Yeah, but because they work in groups, right?
Well, we can do single groups or singles either way. So you can do on your A, B, C, D, E, five flashes, or you can have five flashes on group A, five and group B, five and whatever you want. Yeah, but just not being used to. I'm used to just actually adjusting the flash, putting a basic trigger on, and starting shooting.
Yeah.
So because I'm running multiple triggers and people were knocking dials, they kept changing the power of the flash.
Oh,
so
we're
not trying to figure out why this thing's wrong. Because I'm just so not used to it. You know.
Yeah. Right.
Who wants trigger before it goes in the camera to make sure it's set for the ratios that I'm trying to use.
Yeah, right.
So it took a little bit of getting used to. The lovely folk at Tamron came and dropped off a 35 and 45 mil lens for me.
Yep.
And then the bastards at Tamron came and took them back again at the end of the...
At the end of the show?
End of the show. Oh. They've got no stock. They've only got a couple. So they came and then they took.
So did you get to take them home with you each night?
I was too tired to do anything with them. I brought one home once and didn't leave the kitchen table and then took it back again the next morning.
Yeah.
But I took a couple of quick shots with them. They look very sharp.
Yeah, right.
Very sharp. Yeah. But it's interesting that they're big lenses, physically big lenses. And I'm thinking in this world of microization, it's making stuff more smaller and stuff.
Yep.
You know, like the Olympuses and the mirrorless. Tamron's last four major lenses, the 150-600, beast.
Yep.
The 15-30, beast.
Yep.
These two lenses, focal length, beasts.
Yeah.
It's almost bucking the trend.
Yeah, right.
Which is kind of interesting. But great looking lenses.
Cool.
I've also this week, because I've had a busy week, I was asked, and I found this a bit odd, I've got to tell you. Honestly, and a bit strange.
Yeah.
I was invited to be the photography judge for the Horticultural Media Association Australia Awards 2016.
Right.
Which is a big thing. It's called the Laurels. It opens up the big Australian, the big Melbourne Flower Show, which is the biggest horticultural event in Australia. And it's all the TV awards, all the media. So I'm judging the media awards.
Right.
But what do I know about plants and stuff? That is a people.
Well, you got the shit.
What? The ship.
No. The manure.
Oh, I speak at you. I just thought it was very odd. Yeah, it's an odd request. And there's a, of course, we can't afford to pay you.
Glenn can fertilise our rewards.
they said, we can't afford to pay you, but we want to invite you to our incredibly prestigious big dinner.
Yeah, right.
They have this big gala dinner with all the TV celebrities and stuff from all these gardening shows and stuff, which would be kind of cool.
Hey, a dinner is better than it's good exposure.
My wife has a bit of a for the guy from one of the gardening shows.
Okay.
House renovation show that also does garden. It does the gardens.
Is this that Scott guy?
No, Charlie's name is.
Okay.
Yeah, it's from Selling Houses Australia.
Right. She likes
young English lad.
Okay.
But the problem is, I'm in India.
Oh.
So I get to do all the judging. I get to do all the work. Get no rewards.
And miss out on the meal.
Free tucker.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah, I know. So that's yeah. Well, so I thought, well, I'll do it anyway. I get the name in light. Well, in print something. Yeah. So. And then yesterday, I had the delight of going down to meet someone who I've been following on Instagram and Facebook for a while.
Yeah,
who's been likewise following me. A guy called Bruce Davis,
right?
Who's a rock photographer.
Oh, okay.
And a very, very good rock photographer, I might add. He specialises especially in things like the Byron Bay Blues Festival and things like that. And, yeah, it's just a terrific photographer. And, yeah, he posted, oh, pity I missed you at the show. I tried to get to the show to see you, but, yeah, couldn't make it because I was shooting.
Right.
So I said, oh, yeah, let's catch up anyway. So I went down and into the city yesterday and spent a lovely couple of hours chatting with this guy who does lots of video and lots of photos. And
oh, cool.
So it was kind of nice to actually sit and chat with someone when she does stuff, yeah.
He's
filming a documentary at the moment, completely off the rock stuff altogether, for this philanthropist, not easy word to say, philanthropist, who claims he's solved the problems of the starving millions in Africa.
Right.
And he wants this documentary to help, you know, build social awareness and stuff.
Yeah, right.
And this guy, he's a rich man in himself, the guy who says he's got found the cure.
Yep.
And he gave up all his worldly goods as far as his jobs and everything else, took his family to Africa for years, worked with the UN, not for the UN, and found what he thought was the solution, and no one believed him. So he went and funded 70,000 units of these things that he reckons is the solution and proved that he's got a solution to the starving people of Africa.
Yeah, right.
And no one listened to him.
No, because there's no money in it.
Exactly. And do you want to know what the solution is?
Yeah.
Grain storage.
Right.
That's it.
So basically giving them grain.
A container, a big piece of Tupperware, basically. A big piece of Tupperware to store their grain that they have. Because they can grow the stuff no problem most of the time.
Right.
They have great harvesting. They're very efficient harvesters and working
But they need to be able to store the grain ready to plant the next season.
But the grain only lasts about 3 or 4 weeks before it goes off.
Yeah, right.
And then they've got nothing until the next lot grows.
Right.
And he trialled these 70,000 grain containers.
Yeah.
Big pieces of Tupperware. And challenged these people to leave the grain there for 100 days.
Yep.
Which, of course, they'd never, ever done before.
Right.
And he's got this photograph of this guy, this great photograph of this guy holding this bowl full of grain that's just come out of this grain container after 100 days, and it looks all perfectly fine. And the guy's got the biggest laughing smile on his face, like he's just totally incredulous.
Yeah, right. He's just won lotto.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And
wow.
So, I meant to go and do some Google stuff, so has anyone tried stuff like this before? But I thought that was kind of an interesting little side project and interesting stuff.
Because, I mean, it's reasonably well accepted that, you know, we have the means to eradicate starvation in Africa. It's just no one wants to do it because they can't make a buck from it.
Crazy, isn't it?
You know, it's just the screwed up world that we live in.
Disgraceful. Just disgraceful.
Anyway.
The lovely people at TEDS did a feature on me this week as well.
Right.
And there, if people want to ever.
So they're scraping for content as well.
They are. Must be hitting the bottom of the barrel, dude. Bottom over the barrel. and then this week at the big digital show, there were lots of people, APA awards everywhere. You know, photographer for this and photographer for that awards. And my entire Facebook feed was just for days littered with these people getting these awards.
Yeah.
So I gave myself one.
Nice.
I gave myself, so I did this fake glass trophy with my name on it and the company name on, and put the digital show's logo on it. Right. And loudest speaker award.
Right. Nice.
loudest speaker in show.
Unchallenged.
Congratulating me and well done. And to think I knew you when and all. I said, oh, God. Sarcasm just doesn't work in a written form.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, dear. Anyway, so that's my week. Anyway, it's been a big one, and I'm knackered.
Right. Oh, dear. Well, so that's everything from you?
Well, no, I've got stacks of stuff.
Oh, okay.
I came across this good one tonight. This guy, as a social experiment.
Yeah.
I'll get to that one in a second. Someone posted on Facebook that Carl Hemmings posted on Facebook the other day about Nikon Canon envy. Remember, right. There's a photo of a woman with a whole with massive cameras around her neck. Yep. Turns out it's one of my customers.
Right.
It was just really funny. So, but like a store in Taipei shared this image is where it started from.
Right.
And it's kind of funny. I put the link in there because the photo is so funny. But she does horse racing photography, and what she does is she has cameras stationed up around the track.
Yep.
And she triggers them wirelessly.
Nice.
The horses are going around.
Yeah.
And she's obviously walking back from the setup with all these cameras around her neck.
Yeah.
And someone's and she's picked up, she's got one camera with 600 mil on, she's doing a shot.
Yeah.
And obviously someone's taken it going, oh, how many cameras does someone need, you know? And then you go and read all the Facebook comments. And
yeah.
It's very funny stuff. Anyway. So this guy did this social experiment.
Yeah.
Where he asked 12 photographers if they'd come and photograph an event for free.
Right.
Okay. See responses you get.
10 people said yes.
He asked some interesting people. A couple of people are pretty well known, like Lindsay Adler, as an example.
Oh, okay.
But what interested me was their responses and how people phrase the responses.
Right.
And I thought this article, which I hope I put the link in for, which I didn't, but I will find it.
Right.
It's worthwhile having to read because if you're out there as any form of photography, you're getting these sort of things, and finding a way of saying no or yes in the right way is fairly important.
Yeah.
So because sometimes you don't know who's making these requests as well.
Sure. And
they could obviously, you don't want to be burning potential clients. This one. So the no's. Dude. I make $1,200 of an hour for someone to step in front of my camera, and I'm slammed. I'm not taking one step out of my door with my camera in hand for free. Got to be for a really good cause for me to even consider it.
Right.
So even if it's a really good cause, I'm still only just going to consider it.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to do it, but I'll consider it.
Right.
Versus, while I do it, note the tone in my voice changes. While I do appreciate you considering me for this opportunity, that's lovely phrasing, I do believe my time and skills are valuable and worth more than the possible exposure that could come from this event. I understand the thought that potential work could present itself from this experience. However, at this point in time in my business, I cannot give up my time on speculation, taking away from that the time that could be spent marketing directly to my clientele or working on current projects for existing clients. As an industry professional, you should understand that our time and our talents are the very products that we sell and deserve adequate compensation. If the photos that are that important and valuable to the success of the event, then it should be something worth paying for. Again, I appreciate the offer and hope you understand my reasoning for having to decline. I hope you find someone. That's a lovely way of saying no.
Yes.
Nah, I'm slammed, dude. $1,200 an hour. I don't get out of bed for less than $10,000.
Yeah.
And then the sort of yeses, maybe yeses, let me find out more before I commit to anything, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Very cool. Welcome to the neighbourhood. Can you tell me a bit about your event? Since you're looking for a donated photography coverage, I'd like to ensure it's a mutually beneficial event to attend. Send me over the details and I'll see what I can do. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Is it mutually beneficial? Where's the pros and cons? No commitment, which is really good.
Yep.
But the funniest one of all was what he calls the Italian rejection.
Right.
The Italian rejection is, thanks for thinking of us, but we're actually going to be out of town in Italy next week. Bang. That's number one. Hello, and thanks for writing. I'll be traveling for business to blah, 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 and Italy for 3 weeks. But thanks for thinking of us. And another one, leaving for Italy today, back on the 28th.
Wow. Every photographer is in Italy.
3 out of 12.
Wow.
It's not nearly half.
Wow.
Amazing. So
coincidence three or what?
Going to Italy. I'm thinking next time, anything anyone wants anything from me, no, I'm sorry, I'm going to Italy. Just to get away from this, quite frankly.
Yeah, exactly.
A couple more little things. Did you notice that Western Digital just bought SanDisk?
Did see that. I had that on my list of things to cover too.
So WD buys SD.
Yeah.
$19 billion or something.
Yeah.
They had it all for it because SD is a fairly small company. So it's a little tiny operation by comparison to these other behemoths.
Well, in comparison to Western Digital, I'd imagine it is a small
company. Yeah, so $19 billion is not a bad payday.
Yeah, definitely.
The last things I've got was I just saw this thing about, we were talking about rock photographers and stuff recently.
Yep.
That Janet Jackson on her current tour, her contract states you're only allowed to shoot for the first 30 seconds of the first song.
Right.
It's just not all the time. And all copyright goes to her.
Yeah.
30 seconds.
Yep.
Can hardly even
it
get
doesn't
your
give you much chance to do anything creative, does it?
By the time you've loaded your film and wound it on.
Yeah, exactly.
But that brought me up to this other thing that...
Well, the thing I wanted to say about that, because there was more to this story. Like, it wasn't just the, you've only got 30 seconds and you give away your copyright. She's also been... issuing takedown notices to Instagram that have not just taken down content submitted by fans of hers who attended the concerts and who snapped images on their phones, but they've actually deleted the accounts of those users.
Yeah.
And my initial, and I think I said this on Facebook, what a way to completely A, alienate your audience, and B, totally misunderstand the concept of social media and its importance.
I can't get it. I don't understand
that
it at all.
It's just phenomenal.
Just bizarre.
Yeah, when you compare that with a Taylor Swift, who admittedly we gave her grief a few months ago about her attitude towards ownership of photos by the professional photographers, but her relationship with her fans, completely the opposite end of the spectrum.
Yeah, my daughter sent her first ever fan mail letter today.
I saw that. It's cool.
So sort of hoping I'm praying she gets something back. It'll be
well, Taylor's very interactive with her fans, so you never know.
Bit of luck. But I came across this other thing whilst looking at the Janet Jackson one.
Yeah.
That this Quebec newspaper back in July sent a cartoonist to the Foo Fighters show.
Yeah.
And drew their concert in cartoons rather than have a photographer.
Nice.
And you've got to see this cartoon. It's so bad. It's funny. It's as funny as all get out. So that's kind of funny. Oh,
that's epic.
Great.
Why does Dave Grohl have a cast on his leg?
Didn't he break his leg at some point?
Oh, really?
Yeah. He fell off somewhere and broke it. No, he broke it during a concert.
Oh, okay.
He kept on playing with a broken leg.
Right.
So that's kind of funny.
Oh, they are
that
awesome.
That particular concert. But,
they are awesome.
Someone's just put up, is the Sony A-mount dead?
I don't think so, because there's rumours of a new A-mount camera coming out in November.
Yeah.
Like a full-frame, 35mm frame A-mount camera. So
hold your breath looking at that.
Yeah, well, that would be a successor to the A99 Mark II, which is now, 2.5-3 years old. So you would think if they were going to release another A-mount camera, it'd have to be soon.
Yeah.
But most people seem to think that, Sony have pretty much thrown, the whole, table of chips in on mirrorless. So.
Yeah. I've just sent through the link for the 12 photographers so you can read some of the other responses, cool. Anyone who's interested.
Excellent.
So what else we got to talk about this week?
Okay, well, I've got a few things. I'll just quickly grab that
link
that you've sent me and post that into my notes so I don't lose it. And I'll scroll back up to the top. What have I got? Adam sent us a thing on Petapixel about Janet Jackson, which we've covered. Pixie. This was a very interesting story on pixie.com about what to do when ISIS steals your photos.
Oh, God.
I don't know if you saw this, but a photographer, Brian, I'm waiting for the page to load, Brian McCarty, did a project or a series of photos called his War Toys project, where he used little figurines to make these images that are like war scenes. And apparently ISIS stole one of his photos and put text on it, and basically using it to, I don't even know what the hell they're trying to promote. But the interesting thing was that he's kind of in this awkward position of, what do you do? You don't want them using your image unlawfully, but you cannot accept money from a terrorist organization as compensation for the use of the image. So, he's trying to look for ways to spin it positively.
I don't think there is one.
No, I don't think so. But I loved this comment. The guy writing the article had spoken to a friend of his who works with the UN on, legal matters along these lines. And he had this line in the post: "We agreed that while abhorrent, photo theft isn't quite at the top of the list of ISIS crimes." Which I thought was great. Adam also sent us a thing from F-Stoppers, and this was the Amazon Snowball, which is essentially like a stupidly large hard drive that you can order from Amazon. Yeah. You don't keep it. It's just like a temporary... It's like a lease of it. And this thing has like petabytes of storage. And they ship it to your house for $300. And you can either use this to get massive quantities of data out of your Amazon cloud storage and have it sent to your house so you can then copy it to your local computer. Or you can use it because you've finished working on a massive project and you can copy, terabytes and terabytes and terabytes of data onto this drive. And then within another couple of days, the UPS van comes and picks this thing up and then takes it back to Amazon, who then copy all the data onto the cloud server for you. Huh. So it's kind of, because this is obviously becoming a bigger and bigger problem. We're getting cameras that shoot bigger images, whether you're talking still or video. Obviously, video is a much bigger problem because we've got 4K cameras now and you've got 3D stereoscopic footage. And so the size of projects is getting bigger and bigger and bigger all the time. And while it's okay, you can buy all the hard drives you need for storing locally, when you want to back all this stuff up to the cloud, you can be looking at weeks just to get this stuff, to stream up to a cloud storage service. So Amazon have come up with this thing called the Snowball. Yeah, and for $300, they'll send it to your house, and you either get your data off or you put your data on, and then you send it back with the UPS guy. And very interesting concept.
Yeah, I mean, it's I can.
But you can see how, that's going to become a bigger and bigger issue, So anyway, there was also another story on F-Stoppers, and this was, I think this was also sent in by Reg Vardy, about a film.
I was going to do that too, the ISO 6 film.
Yep. From Kono called Donau, D-O-N-A-U, and this film has the slowest ISO rating at ISO 6. So I'm thinking that's what? Two stops below ISO 25, three stops below 50, four stops below 100. Wow. So, but interestingly...
You're such a nerd.
Why? Interestingly, though, it suffers from fairly strong blue color cast, and they suggest that what this can be really handy for is when you want images to look like nighttime, but you're shooting them in daytime.
Mm.
So that blue color cast comes across looking like moonlight.
Yeah.
So, which I thought was very interesting. And what I also find interesting is that so many of your neutral density, like your really strong neutral density filters, suffer from the same kind of artifact.
Yeah.
With either a strong blue cast or a strong red cast.
What if you put a warming filter on it? What would happen?
Well, that would be interesting to see. As I've mentioned in the past, with my high-tech 10-stop filter, what I've noticed is if I absolutely nail the exposure and then look at the RGB channels, either in Lightroom or Photoshop, if the blue channel is absolutely spot on, the green channel will be around about one stop or maybe three quarters of a stop down. and the red channel is about a stop and a half down. So it's kind of like it's not registering all the incoming light, you know, frequencies equally.
Yeah.
Which is kind of frustrating because, you know, if you're going to shoot like a 20-minute exposure, you can't shoot one frame for the blue and then one frame for the green and one frame for the red, because you're talking 60 minutes of shoot time and 60 minutes of processing time, and, you know, light changes too much in that time, you know. So anyway. But, yeah, I thought it was pretty radical that someone's come out with a 6 ISO film. So anyway.
Just because you can.
Exactly. Hey, look, I'm sure someone will have a use for it.
Yep.
Someone will get.
And I've met people like that before, and I'm trying to steer away from the parties.
Keep away.
Aaron King also sent us the Janet Jackson story.
Oh, sorry, Ren, I stole your thunder.
Yeah, sorry, Ren.
Stole your thunder.
Yeah. And then we get on to a couple of stories from Reg Vardy.
Oh, he's a lovely fellow, that Reg.
He is.
I'm seeing him in a few weeks.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
he's he'll never be the same after that.
Huh? Yeah, haven't seen him in like about 8 years. He took that long to recover.
Right. So the first one was on the New York Times Lens blog about the staging and manipulation and truth in photography. And this was all about photojournalism and the number of working photojournalists who admit to having staged photos, even though the publications that they work for explicitly state that that is forbidden.
Yeah.
But I think it's one of those instances of, when I read this, I likened it to what we refer to in the audio industry as the loudness war. And this has been the process whereby over the last 15 years, music has been peak limited really heavily to make it louder when it's played off CD.
Yeah.
And the thing is, everyone suffers. The artist suffers because their music is not represented the way they recorded it in the studio. The listener suffers because there's reduced dynamic range in the CDs that they listen to. And the mastering engineers who have to master it this way are at the mercy of the record companies, because if they don't master it heavily like this, then the record companies will take the work elsewhere. So you're kind of in this catch-22 of you want the work, but you don't want to sacrifice your art, but you're forced to sacrifice your art because if you don't, it'll go to someone else. And I kind of feel like this is probably the same for the photojournalists who, yeah, they don't want to necessarily, you know, deliberately manipulate a, you know, a scene so that they get images which are, you know, publication worthy in inverted commas. But if they don't, the next photographer down the line is probably prepared to do that in order to get the work.
Yeah.
So, it's probably a catch-22. What are your thoughts? You agree?
I don't care.
Right. Okay.
I have no problem with stage photos, even in so-called photojournalism.
Right.
And in fact, especially in photojournalism.
Right. You think telling the story is more important than the truth?
Story is everything.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, if you changing or recreate, let's say something just happened.
Yeah.
I'm reading an example here in the thing where after the 1989 earthquake, they were waiting for the president to speak, and this guy was reading the newspaper with the front cover saying hundreds dead.
Yeah.
Right. And then the guy closed his newspaper just as somebody was about to arrive, and the journalist said, "Can you open that up again for a sec?"
Yeah.
And then when he opened it, he took the photo so he could get the photo with that headline.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Sometimes, especially in this like war and conflict where you need to get emotively connected with people, you need to either recreate something that just happened and you weren't ready to shoot it, or you didn't shoot it as well as you could, because that photo can have a lasting impact on the conflict and maybe change stuff
for the better. Definitely. I think that sort of example is the soft end of the argument. And I'm with you. I don't have a problem with that sort of thing. I think the bigger issue, and somewhere in this blog post there were, you know, conversations with editors who were saying that they want to see not JPEGs, they want to see the raw images straight out of the camera so they can see the timestamps and know what sequence the images were shot in, because, you know, if the photographer has arrived late, grabbed all of the, you know, the images from what was occurring at the tail end of whatever this news story was, and has then gone on to get things staged to recreate things that happened an hour before, that's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, interesting story, Reg. Thank you, matey. And obviously the link will be in the show notes for anyone else.
It's always contentious issues and stuff like that. But what's this peaking on CD? Why would they want to limit the sound on a CD? Sorry, I don't
quite... Okay, so the way... All right, so apologies for those people who aren't interested in audio.
Don't give me the Bruce Williams explanation.
Okay.
You give me the Glenn Lavender explanation. Why would you want to reduce the sound?
It's all about what we call dynamic range.
I know what dynamic range is.
In audio terms, that is the difference between the softest part of the audio and the loudest part of the audio, right? Yeah. And to limit the dynamic range of your audio, we use two tools, a compressor or a peak limiter.
I don't care about that. Go on.
Yeah, right. Now, what it comes down to is what we call psychoacoustics. And the psychoacoustics says if you play two songs to a... you know, any person who's listening, and let's, you know, disregard any artistic value within the songs. If both songs were of equal artistic value, quote unquote, if you play one song 3 dB louder than the other song, the listener will naturally prefer the slightly louder performance.
Right.
And so... This all started like right back in the 70s and the 80s, right? So what would happen was that radio station engineers would start cranking the compression harder on the station's signal processing so that their station would sound louder coming out of the radios in the cars, so that if people listen to this radio station and then they suddenly switch it over to this other radio station and go, oh, hang on, that radio station doesn't sound as loud. They wouldn't necessarily perceive that it wasn't as loud. They would just think, hang on, the other radio station sounded better. They wouldn't necessarily equate the fact that it was louder and therefore it was better, and they'd completely disregard the idea of having a volume control. They just naturally gravitate towards a louder signal. And so that then passed on to the era of CDs. And so what happened was originally everyone was mastering audio the way it should be mastered, you know, and that's a subjective argument.
Is this the Glenn Lavender explanation?
It is. And so
I bloody hate the Bruce Williams.
But over a period of time, people realized or came to this idea, well, if we make it louder on the CD, people will like it better.
Is that why adverts are louder on TV than the show?
Exactly.
Okay.
And this completely disregards the whole concept of artistic merit, you know? And those of us who are audio engineers have been screaming for 15 years going, but if the music was good, it wouldn't freaking matter. Just because it's louder, if it's crap, it's crap.
So if you make them all sound the same
crap.
Volume.
Hey?
So if you make them all sound the same volume-ish, yeah.
And,
we can like them all equally.
And the thing that's really... starting to kill the loudness wars is Apple has now introduced what it calls sound check in the iTunes Music Store.
Yeah.
And basically what it means is regardless of how aggressively you master the song, all the songs are being put into the iTunes Music Store with the same average volume
so
that there is no longer any advantage to crushing the music. Then YouTube has started to do the same thing with playlists.
And they did that because when they got the iPod came out,
yep.
Yeah, people would also, one song could go quiet, then blow people's eardrums off.
Exactly.
The next one, so, yeah.
Exactly. And I will guarantee that if we were to poll the listeners of this podcast, they would probably all say that my podcast is one of the most consistent podcasts that they listen to. In that, it, you know, the levels are consistent from week to week, and there are
the levels, because the content don't matter as long as the levels are the same. But that must like me more than you because I'm louder than you.
That's right, because you're the loudest speaker.
That works. I won the award. I must be.
Anyway,
interesting.
Yeah.
So speaking of Apple Music, I joined Apple Music this week.
Oh my goodness!
I've got a 3-month free trial.
Right.
I'm loving it.
Yeah?
Yeah, because you can download any album you want for free.
Yeah, right.
And play it offline. So you just download all the stuff that you want.
Yeah.
And then...
hate to burst your bubble, but Google Play Music has had that for ages.
It's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah. How much? So you get it for 3 months for free, and then what?
It's like $11 a month or something.
Right, which is what I pay for Google Play Music, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But that ability to download everything for nothing...
It is awesome.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, could be good for the artists.
Well, hang on. The catch is this... And not being in the iOS ecosystem, I don't know that it's exactly the same, but presumably it is. With Google, yes, I can download any of that content I like to my device, and that can be my phone or my tablet or whatever, but it comes down in an encrypted form, so it can only be played on that device.
Oh, yeah.
And only while your account is active.
Exactly, yeah.
So, you know, it's not like you can just download it all and you've got it forever, you know, because if you stop paying the subscription, then that stuff stops working.
I know that.
Yeah.
I know that.
It is pretty awesome.
It's very cool.
And I'm using it a lot, you know, on my commute to work on the motorbike. I'm listening to music playing off Google Play all the time.
Much fun.
Yes. So anyway, that's us for a week.
Oh, thank God for that. I think it's time for a nice cup of tea.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, mate. Well, you have a good week.
I'd like to say it's been lovely speaking with you.
Oh, thank you.
No, I'd like to say that. Boom, boom.
All right.
Talk to you next week. See you, mate. Bye.
Shutterzing, another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shutterzingpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shutterzingpodcast.com.